this I know with all of my heart. Think about the confidence that that boasts of. This I know with all of my heart. Do you know with all of your heart that Jesus really did lay down His life for you? That He really did pay for your sin, for my sin, and that He rose again, that there's this resurrection, this new life that happens. Can you say that confidently? This I know with all of my heart. We are in this teaching series called This Is Us, trying to understand what did it mean for those very first Christ followers to actually follow Jesus. And so we're dialing all the way back into that era of time, that time of history, where there were these very real people who were eyewitnesses of the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus. And they could say, and with all of my heart, I believe this. Because they were eyewitnesses. They witnessed this. And think about how that changes your life. Because there are many of you in here this morning that you can confidently stand here and say, I know with all of my heart that there's a resurrection, because there's a resurrection that has happened within you. And today, we are still continuing to look in the book of James. And so take your Bibles, go to the book of James. And as we go there, we're going to chapter 3. Chapter 3 of the book of James. And we're going to look at verse 13. And as we look at verse number 13, remember that James himself is one of these eyewitnesses. And he can say with all of his heart, he believes this, with all of his heart, he knows that this is true. And he could not say that at one point in his life. Because it wasn't until after the resurrection of Jesus that James actually said, I believe. Because before that, he made fun of his older brother. He mocked his older brother. But then when James saw his brother actually come back from the dead, that was what it took for James to put his faith and trust in that. And so he becomes this leader in Jerusalem. And as Christ followers are being persecuted at the time when James is leading the church in Jerusalem, he writes this letter to the Jewish people who are Christ followers who are leaving Jerusalem. They are spreading themselves all out, all around the region, running for their life. And yet they are holding on to that phrase, and this I know with all of my heart, because they wouldn't recant. They held on to this truth. Why? Because they were eyewitnesses of what really happened there. And James, this whole letter of James is just awesome. It's just, he's writing to them saying, hey, here is how we live out our faith. Here's what it looks like to get up and go to work the next morning. Here's what it looks like to interact with your neighbors. And here's what it looks like for you to have to go to another city where you don't know anyone. And here's how you are supposed to live your life. And in verse 13, we're going to see that he talks about this idea of biblical wisdom. In fact, he brings up two types of wisdom. He brings up biblical wisdom or godly wisdom. And then he brings up earthly wisdom. And the question for us here this morning is this. Which one are you pursuing and living out? Are you pursuing godly wisdom? Are you pursuing that biblical wisdom? And are you living that out? Or are you caught up in the culture in which we live? And are you pursuing cultural wisdom, earthly wisdom, and living out of that? So we're going to start in verse number 13, and let's just unpack it from there. Verse number 13, James says, if you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with humility that comes from wisdom. So right away, we see that James is challenging these folks. He said, hey, if you're saying that you're wise, if you're saying that you're biblically wise, that you have biblical understanding of God's ways, then here's what should happen in your life. You need to prove it by the way that you live your life, that you're living in an honorable way, and that you're doing it with good works, but this attitude of humility. Let's stop and think about that for a moment. Does your wisdom, the wisdom that you're living out, actually lead you to action? Here's what we know. Biblical wisdom leads to action. Godly wisdom leads to action. And let's not confuse knowledge, because knowledge doesn't equate wisdom. It doesn't equal wisdom. You can have the highest IQ in this room. You know, you may have an IQ of 140, right? You're off the charts. And you have all kinds of information. You have all kinds of knowledge, but that doesn't mean you're wise. Because here's wisdom is this. Wisdom is having knowledge, but it's also having the ability to discern the truth and then applying it to everyday life. So knowledge is understanding. Knowledge is knowing, having the information that when the traffic light is red, that you're supposed to stop. Wisdom says that you apply the brakes when you roll up on the stoplight. Knowledge says you know, you have the information that tells you that in order to have a healthy body, you need to exercise. Wisdom gets you up out of bed in the morning to go exercise, right? Knowledge says that you read, that you hear about this unconditional love that God has for us. But wisdom says that you live out of that love, even when you mess up. And that you don't try and do good things to earn favor from God, to earn more of His love. No, you just accept that you are unconditionally loved anyway, and that you're not trying to live a type of life that's trying to get more love from God. See, that's wisdom. And do you know, can you stop and think about one of the guys in history? In fact, you guys tell me. Most people, whether you're a church person or not, knows who was the smartest guy in all the world, in his historical world. Who was that? Yeah, Solomon. See, everybody knows that, right? Even people who don't go to church know that. Oh, yeah, the wisdom of Solomon. They've heard about that, right? He was like the third king of Israel. And when he took over, he has this conversation with God in the very beginning. And this conversation with God, God comes to him and is like, what do you want, Solomon? What do you ask anything, whatever it is that you want, and I am going to supply it to you. And so Solomon has this conversation with God. Solomon says to God, give me an understanding heart. That's wisdom. Give me an understanding heart so that I can govern your people well and know the difference between right and wrong. For who by himself is able to govern this great people of yours? And then notice God's reply back to him. And the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for wisdom. And we know that history tells us that all the leaders of the region would leave their city and go to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And we have some of his wisdom written in the scriptures and the wisdom literature of our scriptures, of our Bible. And Proverbs is filled with his wisdom. In fact, the wisest guy on earth, not a wise guy, but the wisest guy, the man with the most wisdom, says this in Proverbs chapter 9 and verse number 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Let's stop and think about that for a second. A healthy This is the wisest guy in the entire time of history, right? And he's writing this down. He's saying, listen, guys, you need to understand this, that a healthy fear, a holy fear, a reverent fear That's the very beginning of wisdom. And why? Why would that be the beginning of wisdom? Because a healthy, a holy, and a reverent fear always leads to action. It leads to obedience. That's why the Samuel, in 1 Samuel chapter 15 and verse number 22, he recounts where God comes to his people because his people had fallen into this routine. They had fallen into a religious system and they just started doing things rotely. They just started doing things out of duty and they were continuing to have these sacrifices and God comes to them and says, no, stop. He says, it is better to obey than for you to bring your sacrifices, because that's what wisdom does. This is what wisdom leads to action. And that's why James said, he says, if you're wise, then you need to prove it by the way that you live. And so the question for us today, are you living out this knowledge that you say that you have of God? Is it changing the way that you live your life? And is it doing good works with humility? You know, one thing I love about our church is that so many of you get this. You understand that it's going to change the way that I live towards my neighbor. It's going to change the way that I live towards the people in my workplace. It's going to change the way. And you are living this out. And yesterday, we got to see this happen at Stadium School. You know, where there was 100 of you who showed up. And this is now Mike Hammond, who is our professional painter here. He's one of them. And he was like our project manager. And when we first went and scoped out this job that the school had asked us to come and do, Mike was like, yeah, I don't know, Rick, we better just look at one hallway. And I'm like pushing Mike a little bit. No, let's go down this hallway too. And he's like, I don't think we can, but maybe. And so we got the main hallway done. We got this other hallway done. And we just missed one hallway. That's all we missed, because you guys showed up in droves to help us do that. And that is what it looks like for the church to live wisdom out, is we understand that it's going to change the way that we view our city, that we're going to go serve our city. But then there's this other kind of wisdom he talks about. Look at verses 14 and 15. He says, but if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Now, when we first read this at first pass, you know, most of us would say, well, Rick, that's not really talking to me. I'm not bitterly jealous. I don't have a lot of selfish ambition. Well, if you knew me back when I was a kid, I always had, like, I started out with mini bikes. I almost skipped bicycles, went right to mini bikes. I loved anything with a motor. And then high school hit, I get my first motorcycle. In fact, my first vehicle was a street motorcycle. And I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I think I was 14 and 6 months, I was 13, because in Albuquerque, you could have a motorcycle license when you were 13, as long as you went through these courses. And so there, you know, of course, I'm driving around in Albuquerque, New Mexico back then. So, and I have my motorcycles, you know, I have them through high school, and then I get married. I don't have motorcycles anymore, right? I have kids, I don't have motorcycles anymore. Now, I'm always talking, you know, to my brother-in-law Ward and about the good old days when I had my bike and it was awesome. And so it was my neighbor about 2 years ago. My neighbor comes home on his new motorcycle, right? Bitterly jealous. I'm like, oh man, I wish I had one of those, you know. So this past fall, I'm at my brother-in-law's house. My brother-in-law says, hey, can you help me at mom's house? And she just lives literally around the corner, like five houses. And so we drove my car. Of course we drove. So we drove over there to her house. We pull up into her driveway. And when I pulled up into her driveway, just was sitting there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, That's a Honda V45 Saber. That's what, when my brother got stationed in Okinawa, he let me have that. And I drove that for a year all over Indiana. I'm like, Ward, what is that doing in your mom's driveway? Your mom doesn't ride motorcycles. Whose motorcycle is that? He's like, Ricky, it's yours. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I found this great deal. I know how much you wanted a motorcycle. And so he bought me this motorcycle. He found this great deal. And it's awesome. So now I have a motorcycle. So then I told Ward about my neighbor's 2018 Silverado that he came home with. Bitterly jealous. Really? I think jealousy is in all of us. Are you ever on social media scrolling, Facebook, Instagram, and you're like, really? They're going on another cruise? Right? You're on Instagram, and students, you're like, how come I wasn't invited? There's your group of friends, and they're all hanging out in some place, hanging out at some restaurant, bubble tea, and you're not there, right? You're like, why? Where? There's some envy. There's some jealousy going on there. You walk into your office, and you find out that somebody else gets a promotion, somebody else gets the raise, somebody else gets the bonus, and you're like, that should be me. Why not me? You find it so hard inside of you to celebrate when somebody has a win like that in their life. That's jealousy. Do you try and steer conversations to make you look like you're the hero of the story? Selfish ambition. Are you always trying to put yourself out there, position yourself, manipulate things so that you can be out there? This is earthly wisdom. And he says that such, he says, for jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. He says it's earthly, it's unscriptural, and it's demonic. That's some pretty heavy words right there. Well, I think James has in mind the way the prophet Isaiah described the fall of Satan. In Isaiah chapter 14, because you know, Satan was a created, beautiful, angelic being. And there he is in heaven, and there became some jealousy. There became some selfish ambition inside this created, angelic being. And here, the prophet Isaiah, very poetically describes the fall of Satan. And he says, for you said to yourself, meaning Satan, I will ascend to the heaven and set my throne above the God's stars. I will preside on the mountain of the gods far away in the north. He says, I will climb to the highest heavens and be like the Most High. Do you see that? Do you see what's inside? Do you see what jealousy does? It makes you want to be above. See what selfish ambition does? It makes you want to be there. Ezekiel puts it like this. As he describes the fall of Satan, he says, your heart was filled with pride because of all your beauty. Satan at one time was the most beautiful angelic being ever created. And here he says, because of your beauty, he says, your wisdom was corrupted by the love of your splendor. You wanted it to be all about you. You loved that. You loved the worship that God was receiving, and you wanted it for yourself. And this is why James says this. He goes on to say in verse 16, for wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. Is your life chaos? Is there chaos surrounding you in your life everywhere you go? Well, you might want to ask the question, is there jealousy and is there selfish ambition inside of you? Because James says it leads to disorder. And then he takes it a step further and he says it leads to evil of every kind. It led to the fall of Satan from heaven. Imagine that. I can't even wrap my head around that. And think what it can do to us. James comes back to this idea of biblical wisdom in verse number 17. He says, but godly wisdom from above is, first of all, it's pure. Godly wisdom has this purity of motive behind it. Godly wisdom is also peace-loving. It loves to create environments of peace. It's gentle at all times and willing to yield to others. That is what biblical wisdom, did you hear that? It's willing to yield to others. It's you understand that, you know what, you're not always going to get your way. And you know what, for you, you may have this thing in you where you want to win the argument every time. But there are times when you just need to back away and, all right, I'll yield, just be quiet. It's willing to yield to others. It's full of mercy. That's what biblical wisdom is. It's full of mercy. And then he says, and this biblical wisdom, this godly wisdom, is the fruit of good deeds. You see how it always, biblical godly wisdom always leads to action. And godly wisdom, it shows no favoritism and is always sincere. Does this describe your life? If your neighbor had to write a description of you, would any of these things show up in the description? Or are you always arguing with them? Are you always pointing out how they're wrong and where they're wrong? And get your car on your side. Don't cross the line. You didn't mow far enough. You know, right? Pick up your leaves. They blow in my yard. There's another layer here that I saw. I see the gospel in this. This is the gospel. Because the gospel will transform you and change you. But do you see that the gospel, Jesus, he was wisdom from above and he was pure. Jesus was peace-loving. Jesus was gentle at all times. And Jesus was willing to yield to others. Right? He yielded to this body. He yielded himself to humanity. And he was full of mercy. And Jesus always led to good deeds. He was always serving other people. And Jesus, the gospel, never shows any favoritism. It never shows. It does not matter who you are in this room. It doesn't matter how bad your past is. It shows no favoritism. It's open to all. It does not matter, if whether you're a white collar, blue collar, or somewhere in between. It doesn't matter. Because the gospel shows no favoritism, and neither should the church. And it doesn't matter where you're from. And don't forget, these Jewish people were on the run for their life. And they were showing up in cities. And James is telling them, don't you show favoritism to other just Jewish people. And he's telling us, don't you show favoritism to other people who act and think and look like you. No. No. Because the gospel has no favoritism. It shows no favoritism, and neither should biblical wisdom. And then he closes this with this. He says, those who are peacemakers, as he continues this thought about wisdom, those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace so that they can reap a harvest of righteousness. Now just think about that for a second. God is calling you, biblical wisdom, to be a person who shows up in your workplace and instead of rising the tension of the discussion, you are supposed to come in and calm things down. That's what God is doing. That's what God has called you to do. What God is calling you to do when you post your stuff on Facebook and Instagram or Snapchat, wherever you are, right? What you should be doing is looking for a way you can lower the tension in the conversation. Not looking for how you can hijack it. Not looking for how you can create more controversy. No, that's not biblical wisdom. Biblical wisdom says that you will be a person who plants seeds of peace. Why? Because God wants all of us to be planting gospel seeds of peace in people's lives and then watering them so that a righteous harvest can come. How are you living your life? Are you living your life in this kind of way, our very first next step, if you'll take out your connection card, the very first one says this. And would you be honest with this? Because I know some of you really feel like you're wired this way. You feel like that you are wired to just debate everything. You show up in the office and you can point out everything that is wrong with everything, right? You say, would you be honest and say, I struggle with living a life of peace with others. You just need to admit it for number one. And then the next thing you need to do is to start asking God to empower you to create an environment of peace instead of hostility. To create an environment of peace instead of always wanting to be right and to prove that you're right. What if you created an environment of peace where you could just plant gospel seeds? And then watch as you water that, watch God bring a harvest there in your neighborhood, in your school with your friends. That's what he wants to do, and that's how he wants to use you. That's how he wants to use me. This next step says, pray that God will point out to me this week opportunities where I can live a life of wisdom demonstrated by good works with humility. See, there wasn't one person at same school this past week, or yesterday. There wasn't one person there saying, yeah, we're here because this school's so poor. Nobody was there looking, demeaning. Nobody was like that. There was just a sense of humility that, hey, we just get to serve. And this is awesome. And people, these volunteers, when they were coming in, they were just like, hey, we get to do this. What do you want me to do? They were, at one point, I was just like, I don't know. There's so many people here. It was crazy, but a crazy good. But will you pray this week how you can, where it doesn't have to be a whole church to go out and do something, but where it can be you in your workplace, in your school, or in your neighborhood, and you're like, God, who is it? Who is it do you want me to demonstrate your love to today? And will you pray that for the next 7 days? And watch as you pray that kind of prayer, who God brings in front of you that you can demonstrate this to. And then lastly, maybe you're here and you've heard me talk about gospel and transformation and peace, but you have no inward peace. You say, and you admit it, you say, I have no inward peace. I need God to change my heart. And I would welcome a phone call to help me understand more about becoming a Christ follower. If that's where you're at today, we truly are happy that you're here, because this is a place where you can struggle, where you can wrestle through spiritual questions. And that's okay. And we want to help you. We want to help you along that spiritual journey. And if that is you, we'd love to have that conversation. Just make sure your phone number is clear on the connection card. What you can do with those connection cards is put them in the offering box or hand them to someone in the welcome team. And they would love to receive those, and they'll get them to the office so that we can get them to the staff, and we'll be praying. Will you pray with me this morning? Jesus, we come to you and we ask that you would work like this in our life. God, we want to be peacemakers. God, we want to have godly wisdom. But Jesus, you made it very clear that if we're going to have godly wisdom, then it's going to change the way that we live, the way that we interact with other people. It's going to change our priority list, because it's not going to be about us anymore. But God, that's so hard. It's so not in us to live like that, because our sinful nature wants to make it all about us. So we need your help. I need your help. God, will you change me? Please. And will you change our church? And we pray this in your powerful name. Amen.